Hi there, and welcome to Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your time. Hope you're having a good day. We're going to take a huge, huge exploration journey, okay, into something that I think is absolutely fascinating. And you might have bits of this ability and not even know it. Or you may know it and just not have anybody to talk to about it. It's fabulous. It's fascinating. Synesthesia. Okay, the other thing we're going to check out is there's a story that was just mind-boggling to me when I saw it, about a guy who had this incredible negative happening in his life, but it turned into an extraordinary positive and completely groundbreaking experience. Struck by genius, about Jason Paget. The person I'm talking to today is author Maureen Seberg, and I was fascinated with all this stuff, and then she happened to hit like gold. And now she's got a Vogue article on the way and a whole lot more. Anyway, we're going to talk to her about all of the things that she does and she's exploring. And I think it's going to be a fascinating hour. So hang in there. And Maureen, thank you so much for fitting me in your schedule.
Oh, thank you for fitting me in. It's a mutual admiration society. I just, I love all the things you're interested in. It's going to be a great talk, I know.
Thank you. Thank you. When did you know as a kid that you had something that was a bit unusual or not the typical what everybody else was experiencing in your worldview?
Yeah, I think I was school age. I was in kindergarten. And my why is the sky blue question to my mom was, Mom, why is A always yellow? And notice how I didn't frame it like, why is A yellow at all? You know, it was a given to me that letters had to have accompanying colors, but I didn't know why they always had to be the same. And my mom had a very good answer at the time. She thought that it was the visual aids in my classroom, so she asked me what they looked like. And I reported back that they were black letters on a white background. So that made me realize that not everyone sees the world the way I see it for the very first time.
What's the color 12?
It's actually 2. One is white and 2 is lemon.
Ooh, it has 2 colors.
It has 2 colors. Yeah, each character has a color. But interestingly, in more in words than in numbers, the first letter will inform the rest. Like Wendy, W is like this really beautiful ebony to me, like a glossy ebony. And E is scarlet, and N is like this burnt sienna color, and so forth.
Wow. No, you can keep going.
Okay. And D is sort of a chocolate with brass spheres on it. D is really wild to me. It's the most decorative of my letters. And then Y is sort of a pear color yellow. Not quite chartreuse, but a little tinge of green in it.
Wow.
So
wow.
That ebony is so powerful because it's the first letter of your name. It sort of overtakes the rest. So I get a very polished ebony for your whole name.
See, that's just amazing. I have one more. Somebody wants me to ask from the gallery here. They would like me to ask the letter M. What does that look like?
M is a deep
M is in Mary.
Purple, a deep purple to me.
Purple. Okay, so now we. See, this is, people would probably let you do the entire alphabet so they could figure out.
Oh, my gosh. And at parties, forget it.
Well, it's okay. So when you were talking about this, we'll get into the book about Mr. Paget in a little bit. But first, you interviewed Jeffrey Rush about his abilities.
Oh, yeah,
and
very recently.
I love the things that he brought up.
He was just phenomenal and such a nice man. And I'm not just saying that. Like, given his stature, all the awards he's won, he's so humble. It blew me away. But I think probably the most fun anecdote was the one where 1999 turns to 2000 and everyone's watching the ball drop. But for him, what happened was everything changed color. And that was because he had three nines in 1999, and they were all deep violet lavender. And then 2000 was almost completely pure white because of his zeros being white. And so he said the colors are never like paint chart colors. They're internalized, more hallucinatory sort of colors. And I just thought that was so dramatic and interesting. You know, you could almost visualize his world going from violet to white.
Well, you know what makes sense to me when you're talking about this, when in that metaphysical, new age, spiritual context, they continue to say we're on a journey of ascension. And that's my own stuff too, ascension. And so it would make sense that the colors would do this phenomenal shift as we enter from one age of thinking to a different age of thinking, as more people are born into the world who may have the abilities that you guys are sharing, and your own unique concept of the world then changes the texture of everything that we experience. I just find it fascinating.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think definitely we are constantly evolving, and our world evolves with us. And so, it's kind of suitable that his colors kind of suddenly went really bright white on him for the turn of the millennium.
One of the artists he says he was drawn to and is drawn to, I have a huge picture on my wall that, because I have that same sense that things are mathematical, linear, and yet there's a word that doesn't make any sense to me that causes them all to blend together, and it gives us a much more multidimensional world. And that's how I work as an intuitive, as a channel, that there, I don't go with just one sense. There are multiple sensory awarenesses that come into play, and I can't explain how it works, but I found a way to make it work. When you work with your world, do you feel like you have some things that give you an advantage of maybe getting a different piece of information that might not be there in just an overview?
Yeah, there are a couple of things. Well, as a writer, it's really, I find synesthesia a real bonus because all our letters and numbers are encoded in color, as I've said, and they're consistent throughout life. So you have sort of a mnemonic going on, like A is not just A, A is also yellow to me. So when something is misspelled in text, the color actually signals the misspelling to me before the character does.
You have autocorrect. Nobody else has.
Isn't that funny? Although my editors might disagree because I can't say I'm mistake-free, but it's just the way it works. And phone numbers are easy to remember as well because of the same reason. And there's a really great story, if I may share. The co-founder of the World Wide Web, who is Sir Robert Calau of Belgium, he was working at CERN with Tim Berners-Lee when they did the platform that became the Internet. It was because all the scientists wanted to talk around the world about the super collider at the time. And so Sir Robert has had to go through many secure underground facility tunnel in his life. And apparently these are all keypad entries, and you have to know the code. You need to know the password, and they're numerical. And he got stuck at one day. So imagine, like, one of the premier scientists in the world stuck at this door. Like, oh, God, what's the password? And he said he closed his eyes, saw the colors, opened his eyes, and put the numbers in. So, cue James Bond theme, right? I mean, it's
brilliant.
Pretty wild.
Yeah, brilliant.
And,
well,
and better that it's not like a tool, it's your own mind.
That's what I was going to get in that with Jeffrey Rush. He learns his lines in a way that's similar to that. He brings a different context. And so instead of looking at them and trying to do rote memory the way many of us would, he just lets them come into him.
I found that amazing. And he worked with the same script and dialogue coach for a while, and he said the coach reads the script to him, and he lies down, and he just lets it, as you said so beautifully, come in. So maybe he is more of a auditory learner. Like, it doesn't help him to just stare at a page. It helps him to hear it. But that's another mnemonic, isn't it? Because then he'll have the word plus the sound of the word.
To me, it's almost like an empathic, where an empathic brings that awareness in. And they're not just touching it. They're sensing it in a way that integrates it with their own sensory or light or energetic element. And these are ways that I think we're expanding not only our awareness, but our language and the way that we try to context this stuff, because it's really mind-boggling, and we do not yet have a frame of reference or a framework that is cookie cutter, you know, an overview. There are so many people now who are sharing their worldviews like you and giving us a broader perspective and spectrum of all of the ways that we have to see the world, that you put these children in a class and tell them, okay, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and they're seeing symphonies. They're not seeing the line. They're seeing that they're, you know, their worlds are exploding in each of their little, I don't know if you say mind, but for me, it's more like a bubble. We have this bubble. It isn't just the body. We have this whole bubble of stuff around us that we're trying to make sense of. Does that make sense to you?
It does. Very much so. And, you know, it is interesting because Mr. Rush did say he thought synesthesia was in the mind, not the brain. And I made that the headline because I happened to agree with him. A filmmaker once asked me, describe synesthesia in a single word, which is so hard to do. But I thought, you know, I thought not even a second and blurted out, place. It's a place. It has locality. It has its own laws of physics. It's alternate to the physical. You know, I happen to be a projector synesthete, so not all the time, but a lot of the time, the images are out in front of me, not in my mind's eye. And I learned quickly as a child that that was there, but not really there, because you can't touch it. And you can't put it under glass if you try. And I by these things, I'm talking about the colors that we see.
Right.
Or numbers and letters and even music in my case and in many people's cases.
There was a headline recently with a woman who sees a million colors.
Oh, that's my friend Conchetta, yes. That is something else, too. That's tetrachromacy. And I'll be able to talk a little bit more about that after December Vogue comes out, in my case. But I can certainly tell you that Conchetta is a fabulous painter. And to really understand what a tetrachromat sees, which is a person with four cones for color vision versus three cones, which is the normal, just look at her paintings and see the enhanced color and compare it. Oh, she often takes photographs of what she paints. So you can compare the trichromatic world to the tetrachromatic world. It's really something.
And it's brilliant. It's brilliant. See, I've had this sense all along because of my experiences with my animals. They are seeing something that we don't, whether it's infrared or, you know, a special awareness they have of light that we're not getting, because they'll tell me when I have visitors or guests who are non-physical. And they'll stand there and bark, or they'll get on edge, or they'll, you know, go point out that area. And I'm like, okay, there is something they are seeing that
I believe
we don't.
That, yes. Yes, I think, you know, it's like Shakespeare said, there is more on heaven and earth, in heaven and earth, than we have dreamed of. I'm ruining that quote, but that's the essence of it. You know, it's beyond, you know, I always go back to like Professor Quantum, the animated superhero, and his Flatlander lesson. where these two-dimensional beings who look like Pac-Man live on a flat surface and have up and down and left, well, I shouldn't say up and down, just let's say north, south, east, and west from where they are positioned. But they don't have up. And if you were to put your finger into their world, they would be blown away if they could even recognize it at all. Because up, though we're very well aware that the third dimension exists, they are not.
Yes.
And so I think this is a great metaphor, it's a direct comparison to what we are like in the physical world, trying to make sense of these esoteric things. It, just because we don't understand them or we're limited in our physicality most of the time doesn't mean they don't exist.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know,
okay.
Quantum mechanics is just going to prove all of this, even for the materialists one day. I'm sure of it.
Well, we have to have the people who are fearless. Somebody has to go first. And even if you're ridiculed or labeled an outcast, it's like it doesn't make your reality go away. It just means they don't get it. And you just have to say, well, maybe someday, and continue seeing, because the more we put textures and words and descriptions and bring this into awareness, the more people are likely to get it. And the science is going to be developed right now. That's an extremely distant future. However, it's the future.
Yes, but I think that the supports for the bridge work are going in right now. And I think that there will be answers, and in our lifetime.
I wanted to get into this, and the book that I'm looking at right now, Tasting the Universe, with all the beautiful colors on the front, your book, Maureen Seaberg is who I'm talking to. I wanted to get into this first because I think that made you the perfect person to collaborate with Mr. Padgett, because you had a background, a context, a very good understanding of what he might be experiencing with his absolutely, totally, completely dramatic overhaul of his worldview. Can you get into what happened with him?
Yes, well, thank you. Well, it's you understand me completely now, because I always say synesthesia gave me eyes to see Jason, not my ordinary intellect or vision or anything. When I stumbled on his YouTube video due to a Google synesthesia alert in my Gmail in November 2010, it's a while now, he had a video uploaded of drawings that he does of his synesthetic photisms, which are the things we see in response to non-visual stimuli, or for in his case, numbers and equations elicit these huge, lacy, gorgeous, snowflake-like designs. And I think he had 43 views that afternoon, Wendy. It was far from going viral. But I sat there and I watched it over and over and over again, because I knew this was enormous in the context of synesthesia. You know, synesthetes see some beautiful things. But I think I speak for all of us when I say, because we all see different things. You know, there's no Rosetta Stone. Someone's A might be pink. Someone's cello sound might be triangles, where mine is waves. But they're all kind of amorphous shapes and not crystalline and not orderly the way Jason's are. So I knew something was up. And when I reached out to him, he couldn't have been a nicer, more accommodating guy. I mean, the idea, well, I guess I should explain for your listeners, the way Jason became this way, which is to be a synesthete and a mathematical savant, was that he was mugged and violently beaten 12 years ago and woke up with these gifts. And just the thought that he could go through something like that and still remain a really open person as far as talking about what happened was remarkable to me. And, you know, I've spent 25 years as a newspaper journalist, and I'm used to having to pull some teeth.
But yes,
that wasn't, I know you must know that feeling. And he wasn't like that, which was another miraculous thing about him, I thought. And so it was the synesthesia that absolutely opened my eyes to him. And thank you for saying I'm the perfect person. We're a great team and great friends and complement each other well. And I happen to be a Mensen, but I am not a savant. So I could sort of understand his geeky ways, which I say with love, and he would say it himself about himself. So, it's been an amazing experience. And so the book is Struck by Genius, and now Sony has optioned it, and it will be a film co-produced by Michael Costigan, who did Brokeback Mountain, and Channing Tatum. And it's seen as a vehicle starring Mr. Tatum.
And that's absolutely fabulous. That was awesome. When I saw that, I'm like, oh, yes, this has
it's
legs.
Really incredible. And I'm just so happy that it's going to, first of all, I'm really happy for Jason because 12 years ago, he was laying on a sidewalk unconscious, right? And this just is so vindicating for him. But on the other hand, I hope it speaks to the wider community of traumatic brain injury people, because it's a real epidemic in this nation. It's, you know, from football players getting injured to car accidents and people riding bikes without helmets, et cetera. It's just out of control, really. It's a terrible public health crisis. And not many people, in fact, hardly any people, come through it the way Jason did. So he wants to speak and advocate for them.
Well, you know, the one that we would have in our comparison who was the most celebrated and aware or recognized was Christopher Reeve.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so, and his, what was really fascinating to me was he had done an extraordinary amount, being an actor, of research into what happens, the kind of trauma and all of that involved as he was doing research for a role, and what would happen if somebody was in that vegetative or, you know, nearly vegetative state. And so here he was with all of this background, and then it happened. I thought that was an amazing synchronicity.
It is. It's almost as though he was fated to have the background and then to have it happen so that he could speak of it.
It gave him extraordinary coping skills. In my opinion, I just thought that that was an amazing piece of the puzzle. And the book we're talking about, Struck by Genius, How a Brain Injury Made Me a Mathematical Marvel. This is about Jason Paget. And the deal is, when he, that 12 years ago spot with, for him, he'd never made it past pre-algebra. Okay. So that was where he came from. And then after the mugging, he has this, he sees when water, and I'm reading from the outside, the water pours from the faucet in crystalline patterns. Numbers are geometric shapes, and fractal patterns come from the movement of tree branches. This is absolutely exquisite. And yet, it wasn't something he was prepared for either. So to have you there going, yeah, yeah, okay, good, yay.
Yes, and validation, and sort of like, don't worry, it's a thing. It's real. You know, you're not losing your mind. It's real. And there are other people like you, and I'll take you to them. So, and you know, also it's been so interesting for me because I realize I'm not objective about synesthesia at all. I try to be, but you meet someone who was not born with it when it comes into their life later on. And it's euphoric. It's just when it's not terribly confusing and a little frightening, you know?
Yeah.
Because for me, it's just part of my environment. But for him, it was invasive at first.
Well, there's a lot of information to grasp when you're used to thinking in that Pac-Man kind of way, okay?
Right.
You're just going around consuming
forever
things.
Forever more to be called the Pac-Man way of thinking. I like that. Thank you.
Well, it's that consumer thing we're all kind of brainwashed or programmed into. And then you see, I come at it from a different vantage point, too, that there's this whole other world, these realities out here that are just mind-bogglingly fascinating. And if you're caught up in that autopilot, you miss them. So this is a way of saying, hey, look, what else is here? And not everybody has to have a brain injury to discover this.
No.
But it doesn't mean if you have a brain injury that your life is over, that there are things that are possible, and his story is part of that. We got to take a break. Got to take a quick break. But when I come back, I want to talk to you about how your life has changed, because this really opened up a larger circle so you could bring this message out to to more people and validate those who have this experience and don't even know how fascinating, unique, and normal it might be. Are you on board for that?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. We'll be back in a few. Conscious Living.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg. Ha ha, I win. Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
All right. It's Conscious Living on Empower Radio. I'm Wendy Garrett. We're talking with Maureen Seberg about synesthesia and all sorts of mind expanding kinds of ways to see the reality that we live in, or one of the realities. I think we're multidimensional. So I don't think there's just one. I don't think it's linear. I don't think it's a Pac-Man thing. I think it's like, whoa, it's that oneness, dude. I'm like, whoa. Okay. 'Cause when that happens to you, when your mind expands. That's what it feels like. And you have no way to tell anybody about it. So it's wonderful when we have this kind of experience and we can share it and we can learn. So Maureen, in talking with Jason, what was it like? I mean, he had to be just incredulous that he had these new abilities.
He was. And they were so overwhelming at times that he wished for amnesia, because he also remembered the party guy he was before. And these two experiences still inhabit his mind now. He didn't forget. He had no amnesia. He knows exactly who he was. And yet he had a total personality transformation and was unable to be the man he was before.
In some ways, that was good, because it sounds like he had a few issues.
Yes, he did. you know, he was harmless, but he worked for his dad's furniture store, still does, but in those days took full advantage and was out partying every night, failed out of college, and, you know, just didn't have much direction.
And I would say, yeah, he lacked focus.
He lacked focus, and he was always at the gym, and his favorite outfit to go out in was tight jeans, no shirt, and a leather vest. He had a full mullet. He liked to carry a flask with whiskey in it so that he wouldn't have to pay for drinks at the bar. And he was just a good time Charlie and everybody's pal, you know. Wouldn't hurt a fly, but just wasn't going anywhere, really. Was just happy with life. And in a way, you can't blame him. But he had this other destiny. And that's what he's living now.
Well, it's like this is really amazing. The first part is like a caricature. There isn't a depth. There isn't an inner dimension. There's this beautiful overview that's very, in the context, you paint a brilliant outer frame for this guy.
Thank you. Well, it was as extreme as I say in the book. It was more than 180 transformation. And, you know, now he's serious and barely drinks at all. And he's so cute that when he does, he's sort of like a lightweight now. And, he's married to a wonderful and beautiful gal, Leanna, and they just had their first baby and is back in school and is giving lectures all over the country and doing his art, which is to draw what he sees synesthetically. So he's really just absolutely transformed. Absolutely.
And if you're listening to this, Jason Padgett also has a website, and you can check it out, struckbygenius.com, and find out more about, and read the book too, Struck by Genius. It's just one of those things that gives you a whole different viewpoint of what life could be or is for other people. And I appreciate you saying it isn't cookie cutter, because when the media on this first came out, it was like there was a sense that, okay, everybody who's a synesthete sees the letter A as yellow, the letter B as green, the letter, you know, mm-hmm. Everybody sees it the same. So we were finding this code that other people all had. And, you know, fortunately, it doesn't work that way.
No, it's like a fingerprint. Every synesthete is different. Really different. And Jason is beyond different. There's really no one that we know of who responds to numbers this way. So it's something. And, you know, I'd like to also say, to grow it out a little bit, Jason's story is rarefied. I'll give you that. But it is also the story of all of us. And I'll tell you why. When I took him to see Rain Man's doctor, Daryl Treffert, we both flew in from our respective coasts. He's out in Tacoma. I'm in New York, to Chicago, and then we road tripped the rest of the way to this beautiful little town called Fond du Lac in Wisconsin. And that's where you must journey if you want to see Dr. Treffert, because he's in his 80s and he doesn't travel anymore. But it was really important to us, particularly Jason, that he see him, because he is considered the dean of savants, and he has had over 400 cases in his decades of practice, only 30 of whom acquired savant syndrome later in life. And so this really esteemed, amazing physician says to me on my way out the door, "Maureen, I want you to know what's happening here, like what the takeaway is." And I said, sure, please. And he said, "This speaks to the potentials in all of our brains. This is what I call," and I'm speaking for him, what he calls genetic memory or factory installed software. Because he says nothing was created or added when Jason was beaten. All that he is today was in him already. It just was not expressed. So what does that tell you about all our potentials, right?
Brilliant.
And you know, it's funny. I know you love the animal kingdom, as I do. We give so much credit to, you know, the butterflies who know how to migrate to Mexico to the same place every year, the monarchs. Or the migratory patterns of birds, we will grant the animal kingdom instinct over and over and over again. It's part of our understanding of the natural world. But we seldom think about these things in our own minds. And here's a major physician saying, "Yeah, you're equipped with things you don't know about too."
Yeah, what's another part of that is that until we talk about this, we really don't have a chance to express it or explore it. I was talking recently, and I just had this, maybe this is why, an accident almost. I was driving in traffic, and before I've tried to say, "But I feel it. Didn't you feel them getting ready to slow down? Didn't you feel this lane shift? Didn't you feel the energy?" When we're in traffic, I have a sense, and it's about, you know, maybe half a mile ahead of me, and sometimes I have been able to pull in an accident and see what was going on, but I feel that flow. And as we were going, and there's a merge segment where there are two lanes from different areas merging in together, and I've always told a friend, slow down, because people get distracted here and they're not paying attention. As I look to my right, I'm thinking, okay, this lane is open, and I have this sense I'm somehow, for some reason, I had turned off the radio maybe half a mile earlier, thinking, I just want silence. And then for some reason, at this particular point, I'm thinking, I'm probably going slow enough to annoy the people in back of me. And believe me, I don't always think that. That was a weird, that was an odd moment. I'm aware of this thinking. So at this point, I'm kind of in two frames of reference. I'm aware I'm going slower than normal. And I'm thinking, well, I've got a spot where I can shift and get out of the way of the people behind me so they can speed up. And at that point, I look to the lane. It's open. I'm thinking about moving. I look directly in front of me to see where I am. All the cars in front now have come to a complete standstill. This never happens in this area.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, whoa, okay. But because I had gone slow, I had given myself a buffer. And as I'm hitting the brakes, I'm pumping them to let people know behind me, you're going to have to stop. And I'm pumping them quickly also to get my car stopped. There's only, you know, split second thinking here. I'm trying to give them a message and a signal, and I'm going, bubble, bubble, bubble. Oh, no, it's the bubble. And behind me, I'm watching the guy thinking, I hope I've given you enough room to stop behind me. And he stops, and I hear a huge crash. The car behind him couldn't stop because they were too close. And a lot of times that's what's happening.
Yeah.
But I had felt this whole thing shift. And without even knowing it, I had slowed down and thought, well, good grief, I'm probably annoying people because I'm going too slow. But I just, without knowing it, and I thought later, whoa, that's what I do that's different.
Yes, very different. Very, very different.
But I wouldn't have been aware of it if it all hadn't played out that way.
Yeah, I think there, you know, this is probably the subconscious, and you were in a flow state, and you were being guided, and it's remarkable. It's It's absolutely remarkable. So
what I did was I equated it too, which is really funny, because I had turned off the radio thinking, you know, I just, even though I like the music, I like it. If sometimes I don't always, a lot of times it's totally silent because I prefer being in that element. But mm-hmm. when I turned attention. It back on later in the day, it was so funny because this song, John Lennon, he's singing Strange Days, you know, Strange Days Indeed,
Strange Days Indeed.
UFOs flying over New York. I'm like, it was my UFO moment. The UFOs, they were telling me, aliens, they told me, hey, break the chain.
Who knows, right? But definitely like U plus one, U plus something, or U plus the everything. You know, and it's really interesting, without getting too woo-woo, I mean, synesthesia does give you that sensibility, or gives me that sensibility, or some of us. There's something called mirror touch neurons. And these neurons are found in our brains, and they are known to communicate with the neurons now of other people. There's a network. We are all connected. And synesthetes have a preponderance of these. And so often synesthetes will also be empaths and be able to read a room really well, or gauge people's emotions even when they're not obvious, or feel the pain, the physical pain that another person feels. So there is this sense of connectedness. And I'm very grateful for it, because I know not everyone lives in that headspace at all, and feels disconnected, and that's a shame, because we're not.
And to describe it, let me give you, this is how I had a sense of it. When Robin Williams died, the morning that he died, I had this incredible dream. I was sitting at almost like a console, and I'm looking at about, you know, 60 or 80 screens in front of me, and I'm seeing colors fly out in the air, and numbers and lines, like rainbows and ribbons of just everything you can possibly imagine coming at him. The world around him was, it was fluid, and it wasn't, it would be like water, only with colors and lines and numbers and symbols and everything. And it's like, whoa, that's exhausting. and I thought, to be, and when you talk about the people who knew him, and the people who just are, you know, they have nothing but kind things to say about how incredibly creative he was, always on. And then I connected at the end and asked, well, why did you leave? Why did you go? And, which is really funny, the response I got was, because I just wanted to rest. And then it bump, in peace.
Wow.
I thought, oh, okay. So it was even that little bit of humor at the end. I didn't expect the punchline, you know?
Yeah. Just watching him was exhausting sometimes, wasn't it?
Oh, he was, yeah,
what
he was
energy.
Just, and so that part was, and I also just, you know, this sense of sometimes when we are so wired for whatever it is we're doing, we do it until we are ready to take a break. And he was ready to take a break. And the Parkinson's diagnosis kind of explains a little bit more about where he wouldn't be able to do the things that made him so wired, so manic, so on, that may have given him a different perspective of why he chose whatever it was to step out. But that, to me, when I saw that incredible line and opening that channel of information that was coming in, I thought, okay, that gave me, it helped me to understand what somebody who was that incredibly amped might see as a challenge, to say, I can never shut it off. It will never go away. And my stuff, I can shut off. Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So does yours go away?
Tremendous loss for all of us, but I can see where he would. And also they say that he had bipolar, a label I hate, but he was part of his genius, I think. And,
absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
I like to pay attention to the work of Stanislav Grof, who would call that a spiritual emergency and wouldn't make it a label, you know,
mm-hmm.
would just say he had a spiritual emergency. And
well, and these labels that we have, sometimes they come with this, usually they come with a negative and but in ways that we need to learn how to understand people who are considered ADHD or bipolar or schizophrenic. There are other people who have shamanic abilities who say the schizophrenia is the person in the hospital is seeing somebody standing by the wall, and they are seeing a reality that, yes, is real, but because we don't have a way to quantify it, qualify it, or in any way, shape, or form define it in our Western view, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're outside of
the social construct, the social contract that we have, that we all must agree on what we're seeing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as a synesthete, I feel so outside of that contract because I know I'm not seeing what other people are seeing, not even other synesthetes. So
you know, I've got
that?
A new game. I've got a new game that you need to come up with. Okay, Maureen, put your name on this and you'll billions, okay? So here
okay.
we go. It's a Pac-Man world. Now you upgrade it to Ms. Pac-Man, and then you take it to the next level. Cosmic Pac-Man.
Great.
Okay,
any
where they can come in from any angle.
Out there listening, call us. Yeah, I mean, I think we have been Flatlander Pac-Men and women for too long. I mean, it's, you know, there's this whole movement in the paranormal field. The researchers that really, you know, pay academic attention to this are talking about not calling it paranormal anymore.
Yeah.
Why isn't it just normal? Because people have these experiences all over the world. So why do we make it other, you know?
Well, if they have to put a label, then supranormal or tecranormal or, you know, Abby Fantastic Normal.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to get into one more thing. You talk about this, and I wanted to bring a way to contextualize it and people who can see how we're benefiting from those who have these abilities adding to our way of viewing the world. And there's a book that you shared with a woman who does the emoticons, and she's also a synesthete, so she has a different view of presenting these. Can you share that?
Yes. My friend, the synesthete artist, Carrie Furman, who is absolutely brilliant, wrote a book called The Guidebook of New Punctuation. You can get it on lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. And for her, the emoticons that we have in our general softwares don't say it all. So she blew it out, and she's got all sorts of fun ones, like for sarcasm and boredom. I think she even calls boredom ennui. And yeah, it's just great stuff. And she's an example of someone who is coming at the world a little bit differently, and she's using it to innovate in a way that other people can enjoy it too. And I really am happy when I see that in the synesthete community. Could not believe I lived to see the day that Business Week did a feature this past year talking about how synesthesia has resume value now and all the interesting people who are synesthetes using it, from a car engineer at Ford Motor Company to a woman who worked at the UN and was empathic and able to remember names and spellings and phone numbers extremely well, which is always good in diplomacy.
Uh-huh.
To artists and major recording stars like Pharrell Williams, it falls under the bailiwick of neurodiversity. You know, I think we've made tremendous strides and still have a ways to go in racial diversity. Although there aren't races, but cultural diversity, I should say. And it's time now to consider the many, many differences that people have in their brains, and to not label and to not pigeonhole, but to learn to work with them. For example, and you know, the autism community, which happens to have a lot of synesthetes in it, many people with autism experience synesthesia. But not all synesthetes are autistic. the German company SAP, which is the Google of Europe, now hires autistic people on purpose. I think they've hired 1,800 or more by now to be software testers and software engineers because they know, yeah, they may be a little bit socially remote and they may have some tics that aren't quote-unquote normal, but boy, do they have better concentration powers than you or me if they like something. And why shouldn't they be in a place where they can succeed?
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
So,
now see, this is fascinating. All of this is fascinating.
Thank you. This needs to spread out from progressive companies like SAP to the whole world where, okay, someone's ADHD, well, if that's the label, then give them an environment where they can succeed. And it's not charity. I mean, these are folks who are actually better at some things.
Oh my gosh, no, this is called focus.
Normal person.
Yeah,
so why don't you put them where they can help? So it's a new way of thinking, and I'm really happy to see some companies taking leadership positions like that.
Well, rather than ostracizing or segregating, you are integrating and working from strengths by offering diversity, diverse views, diverse perceptions, diverse concepts, and then you can actually begin to discover brilliance and
Absolutely.
Enhance and celebrate it.
You know, there's a company in Great Britain that actually is a consultancy to help people get placed who have these differences in their brains. And a large portion of the people that they serve, believe it or not, are the STEM people, science, technology, engineering, and math, the nerds, because it is finally being understood, yes, sometimes people who are super intelligent are also at a disadvantage socially or professionally because they don't conform. And so this company gets in between and serves as a liaison between the nerd and the employer. Like, there are many things you can do to make a nerd more productive and more comfortable at work. And then teaches the super geek, well, you know, you should actually dress a certain way, even though you don't want to go into an office. But it's not punitive, you know, and it's not... It's all about bringing everyone together for the greater good instead of taking inconvenient people, be they the super smart or the mentally ill who are having spiritual emergencies, in my humble opinion, or anyone. Instead of putting people off in corners, let's bring it together and let's learn how to work with each other's strengths and not label and not just focus on the weaknesses. And, you know, Jason has taught me that perhaps more than anyone in my life because he does have what are called trade-offs, which is a nice neutral word. He has profound OCD. He has post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, and in some settings, those qualities would be emphasized, right? But mm-hmm. he is triumphant. He overcomes all of them and keeps going. And also as his writing partner and friend, I emphasize the positive too. I abhor some of the labels he's been hit with. And I think he will continue to thrive and succeed. And I'd like to see that chance for everyone.
I think it's coming. And we're going to have to wrap. We're going to have to wrap. But if you're listening and you are inspired and you are curious and you want to know more, Struck by Genius, that's the book we're talking about with Jason Padgett. We're also talking about Tasting the Universe, Maureen Seberg. And if you want to, Psychology Today and then mm-hmm. Vogue, you've got an article
Vogue
coming out
coming
in Vogue,
out in
which
December
is going to
about
discuss.
Heteropromacy.
Which is going to be brilliant. Okay.
Thank you.
And the articles you have with Jeffrey Rush, that's fabulous. Wonderful insight. I wanted to close with, If first give your website so people can connect and maybe interview you.
Yes, www.struckbygenius.com, and there's a contact tab there. You can write us email.
Okay, so the other thing, when I started getting into this, there was a song that came out that I thought was brilliant. I didn't even know what it was about until I listened to the words. I just was struck by the video they made, Gnarls Barkley. And it's crazy. And in there it says, my heroes had the heart to live their lives out on a limb. And all I remember is thinking, I want to be like them. Well, I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy, just like me. Okay. You know, so those lyrics with Gnarls Barkley, I would, if I could have that as my theme song.
I think he should just grant that to you. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it's the way we're going. We aren't crazy. We're brilliant. We're beautiful. We're wonderful. We are no name, no name, no name. We are one. So Maureen, I really appreciate your time. I want to talk with you again when that movie is coming out.
Oh, thank you. I'd love that.
Because I think
for all
that's
the good
gonna
work
be.
You do.
Do you have a date on it? Have they got it?
No. It's an 18-month option, so somewhere in that window.
Okie doke. Well, you got great things coming your way, and so very many ways that you can give people insight into what it's like to have some more views and windows and perspectives on the flatland. I'm telling you, cosmic Pac-Man, okay?
You're a genius. That's all I can say. I've been struck by another genius today.
Oh my. I'm out with my bat to play golf now. Thank you so much. Struck by Genius, Maureen Seberg, you are a delight. Thank you.
How are you? Thank you.
Listen to Conscious Living on nightly, 9 p.m. Central Time here on Empower Radio. Thank you for listening. Have a fabulous day.